Hello, welcome along. Ahoy there, it's Dan. This is a brand new episode of the Fun Kids Science Weekly. This week, I need to give you a warning. Straight away, right off the bat, it's a warning because we're looking at one of the most disgusting, dangerous Dans ever. It's something that you definitely don't want to keep an eye on, although you probably should. That's coming up. You can also hear what Russia are trying to do up in space later this year. And we've got a brilliant guest. The brilliant and funny Adam Kay is on. He's sold about a bajillion books. He's got a brand new one out and he's on to answer some of your questions in a little bit. That's on the way. First, let's catch up with some of our alien friends trying to get back home. This is N&G.
N&G's Meter Motivator.
Hey, N&G.
Energy experts at your service.
I'm learning how to be a meter motivator, and I can see how smart meters help us all manage the energy we use in our homes. But I've got a few questions for my gran. She's wondering whether to get one.
We love questions. Quiz away, Earthling.
Gran hasn't got broadband at home, so can she still have a smart meter?
Of course. Smart meters don't use your home broadband or any kind of internet to work. They come ready to do the job all by themselves and can be installed in just an hour or two.
So Gran won't have builders in to dig up the garden and lay new cables. That's what her friend Kathy said will happen.
Definitely not!
We've seen that smart meters come with separate displays, like a little computer screen you can plug in anywhere around the house. They seem pretty high-tech. But are they safe?
Smart meters and energy displays have been thoroughly tested and are as safe as any other electrical gadget you'd have in the home.
I've read that the smart meter and the energy display communicate using radio waves. Is it safe to have radio waves whizzing around?
Of course! We're surrounded with radio waves all the time, even if you don't have the radio on.
Radio waves are used in all sorts of gadgets, like TV remotes.
And the key fob for your car.
So, the display inside the house, the one which shows how much electricity has been used. Gran says, what if someone pressed the wrong button? What would happen? Would all the gadgets in the house suddenly spring to life?
The display is just that. It's a display. It shows you information about what's been used and what's in use, but it can't make any changes to the smart meter or any other object in your home, no matter how many buttons you press.
That's good to know. You said the smart meter communicates with the power companies too, which is good because Gran doesn't have to take readings anymore. But I don't know if Gran would like the information about what she's doing flying around. Like, will they know she's having a shower?
Great galaxies, of course not. They measure what's being used, but can't tell by what or by whom. And the information is securely packaged just for the power companies, so they can work out exactly the right bill with no meter readings needed.
Gran might like that. It's hard for her to see the meters, and she doesn't always like people coming in the house to take them either, or having to stay in to wait for them.
And we can't hang about either. Looks like we're going to fuse. Good work, Meter Motivator. See you soon. Here it comes. Whoopee! I love a bit of fusion.
Bye, energy, and thanks.
Here it comes.
Find out how you can be a Meter Motivator with N&G. With support from Smart Energy GB. Find out more at funkidslive.com/energy.
Right, it's question time on the show. I'm only going to do two this week because we've got Adam Kay on and he's answering five of your questions, all about the body, all about how your voice works, how you get headaches, loads of stuff. And he'll tell us all about his brand new book in just a sec. My two questions, I've got one from William in Hull who wants to know, why is the strength of gravity different on different planets? It's all about size, William. All matter has some gravity, all of it, even you. You've got a little bit of gravity right now, just not a lot. Nothing to try and measure. Now, the bigger the planet is, the more mass that it has, the more gravity that it has as well. So Jupiter, which is a much bigger planet than the Earth, has a much stronger gravity than the Earth. But the Earth has stronger gravity than the Moon. That's how it works. It's all about matter and it's all about mass and how big you are. Also, here's a question from Noiku on Apple Podcasts, who wants to know, why do you eat? Well, mainly for energy. Food acts as a fuel so we can do stuff every day. It gives us energy. Now, the word calorie, you've heard of calorie before, right? The word calorie, it comes from an old word that means heat. Heat as in fuel in a furnace. The fuel that you stick into like a train, that powers the train. It's the same thing. We put energy into our body. We give us the heat to fuel our furnace so we can go about our day. And not just fuel as well. Food also gives us nutrients, vitamins, proteins, loads more good stuff like that, which helps our body grow and thrive. It's very important. Thank you for the question, Noiku. More of your questions being answered in just a sec from Adam K. And if you've got something that you want answered next week on the show, you need to leave it as a review for me over on Apple Podcasts. It's the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Now, Adam Kay is our guest this week. He used to be a doctor. Then he wrote a book about being a doctor. It sold about 1 billion copies all around the world. And he's got a new one out that I think you'll love. It's called Kay's Anatomy. It's a complete and completely disgusting guide to the human body. Adam, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Now, listen, it's a title that promises a lot. What is the most disgusting thing that you know about the human body?
Oh, where do I start? I mean, it depends what you find disgusting. If you find blood disgusting, then every day your heart pumps 7,000 litres of the stuff. And 7,000 litres is enough to fill 90 pretty disgusting baths. So actually probably don't do that. It's pretty disgusting if you find out that you in the past have drunk your own wee. No, it wasn't that lemonade that tasted a bit weird last week. It was actually when you were a baby, when you were inside your mum, the water you drank was the same as the wee that you weed out. So, I mean, that's slightly disgusting. If you think brains are a bit squidgy and disgusting, if you unfolded your brain, it would be the size of your pillow. Again, please don't do that. I don't want complaints about all messed up duvets and things. The spit that you produce in a single day would fill 2 cans of Coke. The longest fart ever recorded was 3 minutes. I mean, there's a lot of disgusting stuff going on in the air, let's be honest.
Now, a few things I need to pick up on from that. A long fart, what would make, in your medical experience, what would make a fart go for 3 minutes?
You'd have to wonder about what the record holder had been eating at the time, wouldn't you? Because a lot of things increase the amount you fart. All it is air that's inside your intestines. And in fact, swallowing air is one of the big things that does that. So actually fizzy drinks or something that's got air in it. Also, if you like suck on your pen lid or something, that puts lots of air inside. And also, I'm sure everyone realizes there are certain foods that increase your fart volume and quantity. And things like beans and vegetables and meat, all sorts of things. And that's because when your intestines, when your gut is digesting it to get all the good stuff out, certain types of food, the bacteria, the little bugs that are hanging around in your gut. Oh, by the way, your poo is alive. Over half of your poo is made up of bacteria that are alive, and don't panic too much. Anyway, but some of these bacteria produce a bit of air, and that air turns into fart. So I suspect the bloke who farted for 3 minutes probably had just eaten about 400 tons of baked beans, maybe.
It makes you think, if he's a record breaker, that he might be brilliantly well practiced at this. It's a bit of a fuss getting a record. You've got to get someone down, record the thing. Maybe this guy has been practicing, which means, I don't know, can he control his farts? Is that possible?
Yeah, that's perfectly possible. And in fact, if you look back through history, there were people who made their living through professionally farting. Hundreds of years ago, kings and queens in all sorts of countries would employ all sorts of professional jesters and entertainers. And there was one in England who was known as Roland the Farter. And his job was just to do amusing and amazing farts. And he was so popular with the king at the time that when he retired from his farting job, they gave him an enormous house in the country.
I tell you, my dad has been born in the wrong century. He would have made a killing back then. Now, just tell us a bit more about the book. So how does it look? What's the form? How did you go about researching everything that's disgusting inside your body and then making it brilliantly readable for us?
Well, I worked as a doctor, and so I had to sit in a boring lecture theatre for 6 years and be told all of these facts. And the facts that mostly stayed with me were the slightly disgusting ones. And I've always thought that the body is absolutely fascinating. And I know not everyone thinks the body is fascinating, but that's only because they don't realise quite how amazing some of this stuff is. And I thought I could write down everything I know about the body, and other people might also find this stuff interesting. Things like the amount of skin that you shed in a lifetime would fill a wheelbarrow. Or the fact that you blink for 1 month every year, or that your nose can tell the difference between a trillion different smells. And maybe your dad's farts are the very worst of that trillion.
Oh, I tell you what, Adam, they are horrendous. Listen, it's made me think of a question, the fart question. What's the kind of the biological difference between a barp and a fart? I know they come out of different ends, but what's happening inside your body which determines where it's going to come out of?
It's basically as simple as where the air gets produced. Top half up as a burp, bottom half down as a fart. So anything that's in your stomach, if your stomach's all a bit stretched with all of this air that's in it, you've just chugged 10 pints of Coke, and then it suddenly out the top.
That would make a nice slogan, I think. Top half burp, bottom half fart.
Yep.
Now, listen, thank you so much for coming on. When we get proper experts, we like to get questions from our listeners and just chuck them at you and see what happens. If you've got something, by the way, leave it as a review for the Fun Kids Science Weekly over on Apple Podcasts. Finn has done that, who wants to know, Adam, why do we get headaches and migraines? What's going on there?
Right, annoying, aren't they? I mean, there's lots of different things that cause headaches. Things like stress, when you've had a nasty old day and school's been rubbish, or the traffic's been awful, the muscles in your head can tighten up. If you're dehydrated, like you've not had enough to drink, if you've been listening to loud music, if you're tired, if you've been on a long car journey. And also there's a fun reason. If you've had a load of ice cream really quickly, you get brain freeze, which you'll be pleased to hear doesn't actually mean that your brain is freezing. What's happened there is nerves, which are these little wires that send messages all around your body, have got confused. And instead of sending a signal to your brain saying, this is cold, it gets muddled up and goes, ah, this is painful. And that's a brain freeze. And while I've got you, there is one serious type of headache that I think everyone should know about, which is called meningitis. And it's not very common. And now we can have vaccinations that stop you getting the most serious types. But this is a headache that also gives you a rash, or also gives you a stiff neck. And if you've got a headache with a rash or a stiff neck, that's something to always chat to an adult about.
Brilliant. Of course, we need to keep that in mind. So is it a headache at times? Is it the muscles getting tired and squeezing? Is that what's making us a bit pained when we don't have enough water?
Yeah, there are all sorts of things that can make the brain hurt. Weirdly, the brain itself, the squidgy grey and white stuff, doesn't actually feel pain itself. So when you're feeling pain of a headache, it's to do with muscles or blood vessels and the stuff around the head. So you can do an operation on someone when they're awake on their brain and it doesn't hurt, because the brain itself, even though it's in charge of, you know, all the pain when you stub your toe or whatever, doesn't feel pain itself. And once a doctor was doing an operation on someone, and they played the violin whilst they were operating on this person's brain. So I really hope that patient was very good at the violin, because otherwise that would have been really off-putting for the doctors.
That's kind of creeping me out, the fact the brain can't feel pain itself. So thank you so much for that question, Finn. This one is from Lily. Why do we throw up? So when we're ill, when we're feeling sick, why is one of our body's reaction to propel food and other stuff out of our mouth?
Yeah, it's a very good question from Lily. And again, there's lots of reasons for it. So anything from like a bad headache to, you know, a high temperature, if you've just stepped off a roller coaster, if you've just read a particularly disgusting book, that all can make you throw up or vomit, to use the proper medical term. But the most common reason is because your stomach has detected something that shouldn't be in there. So like if your stomach spots that you've eaten some food that's covered in germs, it tells your brain to press the ejector seat. And so right at the bottom of the stomach, that all closes up, and then your abs, so the muscles at the front in front of your stomach squeeze in, and then suddenly your lunch is all over your jumper. And that characteristic horrible smell comes from something called butyric acid. That's a good one. Remember butyric acid, because that's a fact that I bet you that your parents and your teachers don't know. So, and you can show off with that one or make them seem stupid, whichever you prefer. So the butyric acid gives it its smell. And interestingly, butyric acid is also found in lots of different cheeses. So if you've ever, you know, sniffed some Parmesan and thought, that smells a bit like puke, you were right. It's exactly the same stuff.
So when we have to take a day off school, maybe, and you know, without getting too disgusting, when you've been sick for a while and you're still sick, nothing's coming up, but you still feel like you need to retch. What's happening in, what's our stomach detected there that makes you want to vomit?
It's the muscle is just very sore, really. So like, you know, if you do loads of exercise, you know, sort of lifting your weights up, as I know you do all the time, Dan, probably doing it now, after you've done it, you know, lifted the weights a few times, your arms getting sore and sensitive, and exactly the same happens in your stomach. It's had a really rotten time with these germs in it, and it's anything you put down in there makes it sort of twitch and sort of, and want to get rid of anything that's in there. So it's overreacting a bit.
Ah, Lily, thank you so much for that. This one is from Ben, who wants to know, how do we talk? What's making the sounds?
That's a very good question. Really, talking is just a slightly fancy version of breathing out. So, you know, obviously breathing involves your lungs. Air goes in, air goes out. And as it's coming out, if you want to talk, it goes through a part of your windpipe called your vocal cords. And the air whooshing past them makes them vibrate a bit like the strings on a violin or something. And so that just creates a sound. And if you want to make the sound more exciting than just a, then you have to wobble your tongue and move your lips around. And that turns the into specific special sound. So say you want to say the word bum, who wouldn't? So you press your lips together for the B, but, and then you put your lips in a bit of a circle for the oh, and then closed again for an M sound, bum.
I loved a deep dive through how you make the sound bum. That's amazing.
It's crucial Ben. Information. Ben, that crucial was brilliant. Information.
This is from Josh. And this is important at the moment. We're always hearing about vaccines in the news. And if we do feel a little bit sick, maybe we have medicine that we might have in the drawer, paracetamol, ibuprofen, Calpol, that kind of thing. Josh wants to know, how do medicines make us better?
That's a very good question. It's a very big question. I could write a really boring book about how medicines make us better. So, vaccines are very, very interesting because obviously, vaccines are a brilliant invention. And what they do is they stop you getting a disease in the first place. And it's much better to never get it in the first place than try and treat it afterwards. And the idea behind vaccines is tricking your body to put up all of its defenses, get all of its defenses ready to deal with a special illness of any kind. Because obviously COVID is the illness that we've been trying to prevent a lot at the moment. And it takes your body a bit of a while, once you've got an infection, to develop all of its defenses that it needs. And so the idea behind this is you give the vaccine and the body, you don't get sick, but the body makes all its defenses. So if you are unlucky enough to get a bit of COVID, then hopefully your body can just thwack it away. And in terms of if you're not feeling so well, the way the medicines work depend on what's the matter. So a lot of medicines are pills or liquids, and those you obviously swallow, and then the stomach breaks it down, which sends it right off to a place called the liver, usually, and the liver chucks the medicines into your bloodstream, and luckily your blood goes everywhere, which means that it might be pain relief that it needs to send to your head, or antibiotics to send off for an infection in your, you know, in your throat or in your little finger or whatever. So that's why you might sometimes wonder, why am I eating this tablet or drinking this liquid if it's got to go to my little finger? And that's the answer. And other common things, lots of people have asthma, and this is a sort of medicine where you take your inhaler and you basically breathe it in, and that medicine acts directly onto the tubes inside your lungs, and it works to open them up. And sometimes people need injections, and most common one for that is probably for diabetes. If you've got diabetes, you might have it, someone you know might have it. It means that your body isn't making something called insulin, and your body needs some insulin, and so you replace it by putting it in yourself.
Amazing. Maisie is our last question, who wants to know, how do we make more blood to stay alive?
Staying alive is really important, and you're quite right that it involves having blood going around. Blood's made up of all sorts of different cells. There are red blood cells, and there are white blood cells, and there are platelets. I don't know what colour they are. Maybe green blood cells. Anyway, okay, fine. They're not green, really. No, they're also a bit white, actually. So maybe that's why they didn't call them other white blood. Anyway, all of these blood cells have a certain life expectancy. So like red blood cells last for around 4 months. And obviously your body agrees with Maisie that it's important to have more blood so you can stay alive. And actually, blood comes from a slightly surprising place. Blood cells come from your bones. So you think of bones probably as sort of quite solid things, big lumps of white stuff. In the middle of your bones is a very squidgy bit, and that's called your bone marrow. And that's actually the bit that dogs find delicious. That's why dogs, like my dog Pippin, love to run around with a bone and chew on that. So yes, your blood cells come from your bones.
Very quickly, does the body have a level where we need that amount of blood? So if something bad were to happen and we were to lose blood, if we give blood away and we need more, does the body instantly know, I need to get to work, I need my bone marrows to start working, making that blood?
Absolutely. It's a very, very clever setup your body's got. So you can actually lose quite a lot of blood before it becomes a big old emergency, because your body's got a little bit spare. But as soon as you've lost some blood, a message goes out to your bones saying, hurry up, guys, we need to get some more baby blood cells. But obviously some people end up needing a bit of a blood transfusion, which means blood from somebody else, because you can lose so much blood that your body won't cope very well at all. And so one of the most amazing things that adults can do, kids can't do this because, I mean, kids aren't allowed to do loads of things, not allowed to drive cars, not allowed to give blood. It's so unfair. Anyway, is giving blood. So you go along to a place, and in return for a bit of a lie down for half an hour, and I think you get a biscuit as well, they put a tube in your arm and take a pint of blood from you. And this means that if people have had serious operations or bad car accidents or something like that, then every hospital has got a load of spare blood to top you up in case your bone marrow needs a bit of a head start.
And you also get a sticker, I think, and everyone loves a sticker, Adam.
Oh, yeah. I had my vaccine today and I got a sticker and I was delighted.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much on Vaccine Day to chat to us. The brand new book, Kay's Anatomy, it's out right now. And listen, you've had, just over 10 minutes of incredible Amazingly funny explanation. Imagine a whole book filled with that. You need to get a copy. It's Kay's Anatomy. It's out now by Adam Kay. Thank you so much for joining us, Adam.
Thank you for having me.
It's time for this week's Dangerous Dan, which is all about what might be one of the most terrifying life forms in the world. Loa Loa is a parasite. It's a nematode worm. It's known as the eye worm, which gives you some clue what it gets up to. Now, the larvae of these worms, this parasite, it gets into a human's body. It infects you through fly bites, and it can lie in wait for years. Now, the parasite, it makes you itchy. It can make part of your body swell up. The worm travels all around you until it reaches the eye, and then it buries in there. It burrows down. It moves inside your eye, and it doesn't do it secretly as well. Some people can actually look at another person's eye and see that worm inside. It squirms about under the surface, a little parasitic worm wriggling in your eye. Sometimes it even breaks through and it squirms free. Now, you mostly find these in Africa, and it won't always kill people. It can be taken out by a doctor quite safely, but still, it's like something from a horror film that I never want to see. A parasitic worm squirming inside your eye. Oh, it's disgusting, isn't it? I told you, I did warn you at the start. Come on, Loa Loa, the parasite. The eye worm has to go on our Dangerous Dan list, don't you think? We're learning all about the weather right now with Marina Ventura.
Marina Ventura's Climate Explorers.
Hi there. Marina Ventura here. I love finding out about the natural world, and that includes the Earth's climate. We know that weather can change from one day to the next, but climates can change too over the time span of years, centuries, or even longer. So I'm on a mission to fill MapApp with the latest climate information with the help of some awesome climate explorers. Come on then, let's go. Do you know how to tell the age of a tree? Maybe you know it's something you find when you cut into the trunk. It's the rings, right? By counting the rings, you can find out the age of a tree. Have a look out for tree stumps next time you're in the park or woods, and you can count them for yourself. You might also know that those rings hold clues to the climate in the past. Wet years will mean wider gaps between the rings as the tree grew very quickly, whereas very dry years will have a narrower gap as the tree didn't grow much that year.
That's right, Marina. Forests can help unlock many more secrets about the climate. They take carbon dioxide from the air and store it in trees, plants, and the soil. They are also home to much of the world's wildlife.
Time to meet our next climate explorer.
Hi, I'm Phil, and I'm a forest scientist. Maybe you've been learning at school that forests are important, and one reason is that trees, like all plants, absorb carbon dioxide, which is a gas we exhale and which is a waste product from burning fossil fuels. The more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, the warmer the planet becomes. So it's great that plants store carbon, but how can we tell how much?
I suppose trees don't have a list of ingredients on the side like a packet of crisps.
Unfortunately not. I use lasers to estimate the weight of trees. This helps us to figure out how much carbon, something we call biomass, there is in the environment, and how it's moving between plants and the atmosphere. Sometimes we use satellites to measure the forest as well. We use a variety of technology to gather as much information as we can.
Wow! Lasers! Sounds pretty exciting.
I'd like a laser like that.
No, they don't make that kind of noise. It would be fun if they did. It's really important for us to be able to measure this because we know that humans are causing damage to forests. This damage is not just caused by chopping down trees, but also when fires are used to clear the ground. As well as releasing carbon back into the atmosphere, cutting down forests can affect the local climate and environment. Rainfall patterns can be disrupted also. That's important for local people. And by removing the forests, we are also threatening the animals and plants that live there with extinction. Once a forest is cleared, modern industrial farming can decrease the soil's nutrients, releasing more carbon into the atmosphere. So by measuring the amount of carbon in forests, we get a clearer picture of how important they are for protecting our planet against climate change.
Good work, Phil. Really valuable stuff. We've met a few climate explorers now, and something they all have in common is that gathering information is an important part of their jobs.
That's right. Whether it's from the clouds or volcanoes, the seabed or the rainforests.
And we've gathered lots of new information too. Ready for upload, Mappy?
Load me up.
Next time, we'll be doing some puddle jumping and finding out how we can learn about climate change from flooding right here in the UK. See you soon.
Marina Ventura's Climate Explorers, supported by the Natural Environment Research Council, the science of the natural world. Find out more at funkidslive.com/marina.
It's time for this week's Science in the News. The oil company Shell has been ordered to cut its emissions. It must reduce the amount of CO2, carbon dioxide, that it makes and pumps into the atmosphere by almost half, by almost 45% over the next 10 years. Also, Russia is making a movie in space. I want to see this right now. It's not even been made. The director, Klim Shipenko, and the actress, Yulia Persild, will fly to the International Space Station later this year, in October, and they're going to make a film about space. It's currently called Challenge, but that might change later on. And finally, here's some exciting. Dogs are being trained to sniff out coronavirus. Scientists have found that COVID-19 has a particular smell, and they're training dogs to find the smell when everything properly reopens so they can spot the virus. Experts have been running trials, and dogs have correctly spotted 88% of positive cases so far, which means in every 100, they've only missed 12 positive cases. Brilliant work from the dogs, as always. It's what you expect. And that is it for this week's Fun Kids Science Weekly. Thank you so much. If you've got something sciencey that you want answered on the show, you need to leave it as a review for me over on Apple Podcasts. Give us a follow while you're there. Also on Spotify, Google, wherever you get your shows, make sure you follow us. You can find us on the free Fun Kids app and at funkidslive.com as well. And Fun Kids, we're a children's radio station from the UK. Listen to us all around the country on your DAB digital radio on that free app. And as always, at funkidslive.com.